Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, we need, desperately need, massive investment for the future. Our children need it, but we need it too. I mean, at the end of the day, the jobs that will be created, the reverberation effect across economies, and we can get into all that wonky stuff, that how it's going to be good for the economy, it's going to be good for workers, it's going to be good for people. And it's what we need. And this is what I'm hoping Biden will be doing in the coming weeks. Get out on the stump like he was today, hammering on the fact that we need it and telling stories of how it's going to make people's lives better. Tell those stories. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what we need to be doing as the Democrats are arguing over numbers. Is it $6 trillion? Is it $3.5 trillion? Is it $1.5 trillion? Is it $2 trillion? I don't even know where we are on the scorecard, but I've asked Carl Rosen to come talk with us. He's the general president of UE, United Electrical, their website, ueunion.org. Carl, thanks for taking some time for us.
Great to be here, Rick. Happy to join you and your listeners.
So I'm looking at this, you know, Democrats are in this fight over numbers. Is it going to be 6, 3.5, 1, 2, 5? Who knows? And we're not talking about what's in this bill that's going to make people's lives better.
No, that's right. And I think that's something that members of the Progressive Caucus have been doing very well, is saying, let's talk about the issues that are here. Let's talk about expanding Medicare so that it covers hearing and dental and eye care and gets to a lower age and brings down the cost of prescription medicines. Let's talk about providing quality childcare for everyone in this country, so folks who want to work can work, and so that kids all get an equal start in life. Let's talk about making sure that there's care there for our seniors. Let's talk about making sure that there is a planet here for us where we can live, by starting to make the investments, and only a down payment, but at least start to make the investments that are needed to deal with climate change, either to protect areas that are under threat because of climate change, or to start making the conversions that are needed and put people to work at good wages, union jobs, doing the work that's needed to have non-polluting industries instead of polluting industries, yep, whether it's an energy field or any other area that makes use of carbon-based products. Nope. So there's a tremendous amount in here that's all extremely important. But what's most important about it is it's from the bottom up. This is not trickle-down economics. That's why the right wing is so upset about this. That's why the corporate sponsors are so upset about this. This is starting it from the bottom up rather than the other way around.
No, and that is the important part. And I've been saying it's a reset of the last 40 years. It's undoing Reaganomics, the supply side voodoo Reaganomics that have really put us in this place. And I've had people tell me, well, you know, we were missold this. It was that it was going to trickle down. We were scammed. And I'm going, we weren't scammed. Trickle down worked exactly the way it was supposed to. That's the money, right. Goes to the people at the top, and the rest of us are looking up waiting for something that is never going to come. You knew it 40 years ago just as well as we knew it now.
That's exactly right. Follow the money, and we need to follow the money to the right places this time. There's a tremendous amount of money in this country that can easily cover the reconciliation bill and a lot more. I mean, the original figure was a lot better. The six trillion they were talking about, we should have done it. The three and a half trillion was already a compromise on that, and now they're wanting to chop it down further or not at all. I mean, it's just an outrage.
No, it's absolutely crazy. And you look at this, and good on you guys for standing up and telling the Progressive Caucus to stand firm. I know there's some, and look, I'm somebody who says we got to take what we can get when we can get it, but you still got to fight for what you want before you get what you can. So I'm of the mindset, you go, hey, we should be pushing for more, and good on them for doing it.
That's right. And there are also many other important elements that have been stripped out of this bill too, that ought to be there. And you know, let's remember, we're only in this situation because the U.S. Senate is allowed to function as an anti-democracy institution where it requires 60 votes to get something passed under normal conditions. And that's there, you know, I mean, that traces back to the history of slavery. We know that. And that's there to keep from the American people from being able to get what they support in overwhelming numbers. And people in the U.S. in overwhelming numbers support everything that's in this reconciliation bill. And it's only because we have this cockamamie filibuster combined with an unelected parliamentarian who can declare certain things out of the bill on arcane rules and it's all a shell game. They can get that, you know, they've got all kinds of ways to get around that parliamentarian if they really want to. It's giving people political cover as to why things aren't included.
No, and this is one of those moments, Carl, and the reality is, and you hit it right on the head. The stuff in this bill, when you start talking to people about what's actually in it and getting away from the number fighting, overwhelmingly, Americans want expanded Medicare for people, you know, 55 and older. They want expanded Medicare for Granny to get some new chompers and a hearing aid and some vision work, because we know it leads to better health outcomes. I mean, we can make those wonky arguments, but the reality is it's just making people's lives better. And for me, that's the point that should be hammered home again and again.
That's right. And it's good policy. And then it's also good politics. And this is the problem that the Democrats keep running into. They get into office and they don't deliver. I mean, the Republicans, when they get into office, they not only deliver what they ran on, they do eight times as much damage than what they had threatened to do. And they really deliver for their corporate masters. Well, you know, if the Democrats want to pretend that they're a party of working people in this country, of the dispossessed in this country, then they actually need to deliver for us, instead of coming in and coming up with excuses why they aren't delivering. Yeah. And that's what we're watching right now, and that's got to change.
So what do you say to the person, Carl, who goes, well, if the Progressive Caucus does stand up, if they are the ones who are going to push and push, that we may end up with nothing at the end? I predicted months ago that eventually we'll probably get nothing because everyone's going to shoot each other in the foot. And it'll be another decade before we start talking about these kind of investments again. What do you say that, you know, taking that hard line could lead to nothing on the other end?
Negotiations is never easy, and it's always darkest before the dawn. So you have to be prepared to go toe to toe, or you will end up with nothing. And we have to continue this fight. And here's the problem. They could pass this infrastructure bill, but if they don't pass a reconciliation bill, we're going to end up with worse than nothing, because the Democrats are going to lose in a landslide next year. And then, Katie barred the door on what else is going to happen to us. They already control the Supreme Court. We've got the evil one waiting to try to come back in 2 years. And, if they steal enough votes in all of these other states, it's a real threat that we could be in a dark ages kind of situation here. The way to stave that off is to deliver for the American people. And if it takes the Progressive Caucus to slap other parts of the Democratic Party upside the head to say, wake up, you got to do something here or we're all going to be toast, not to mention what it's going to do to this country, then, you know, more power to them. That's what we're saying. When we're in bargaining, we don't tell our members, right before the contract's done, let's agree to half a loaf right now. No, you keep fighting for everything you can get right until the end. Will there be compromises? Sure. But if they pass the infrastructure bill right now without any deal on the reconciliation bill, the reconciliation bill will never come.
Absolutely.
It's gone. That's why they have to stand tough.
No, that's the only leverage that's left. So they have to be linked. There's no way you go with one because you're not going to get the other. And look, this is where I've been saying for a very long time, and I've been a union guy over 30 years. I've been part of these negotiations. You understand the give and take. I don't think the Democratic Party understands how to negotiate, which is why we need people who do, which is why we should have people like you on those negotiating committees.
Well, and frankly, you know, the folks in the Progressive Caucus, a lot of them have close ties to labor and understand how it's done. And that's why they're doing it. Shame on some parts of labor that don't recognize what a gift this is to the working class and don't find more ways to take advantage of it. But, there's plenty of unions that do understand it and are working with them closely and are glad to see that this type of approach is being used. It's what's needed.
Yeah, is this a moment for labor to step forward and start talking about this Build Back Better plan and really the bipartisan infrastructure plan? Because we do need both of them, and I think we need to do that educating of what each one is and why each one is important.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and frankly, it should have all been one bill, and that was the original plan. And it all encompasses basically Biden's agenda. Labor spent a tremendous amount, both in money and people effort, to get him elected with this as his agenda. And, in order to try to deal with the quote unquote moderates, who are basically corporate Democrats, let's call them what they are, a deal was cut to split the bills, but still move them both. And it was a face saving thing, I guess, et cetera. But there was a deal there that they're now trying to get out of on the other side, and it's not right. So, all of the labor movement should be standing up for both bills. Both of these are important together, including in the reconciliation bill are pieces of the PRO Act. I mean, it's just nuts for labor not to go to the barricades for that.
No, and it's what we need. Now, not everything in there, but the financial parts of it. And let me ask you about that since you brought it up. It's not everything I want. I want a full repeal of Taft-Hartley. I want to return my Wagner rights back to me. And we can argue if that's even enough. But the financial part of it is a little bit of a disincentive for employers to keep breaking the law. We just found out that Amazon was illegally fired two workers there, and they reached some kind of an agreement and gave them back pay and slapped them. Amazon got the slap on the wrist, posted the dreaded notice, but that's it.
Yeah, yeah. No, they see it as a... The fines are so small, or there aren't fines, that the back pay awards or whatever else are so small for these corporations. They just see it as a cost of doing business, right? It's not something that's going to stop them from doing business the way they want. It's just something that they build into their expectations of how they're going to operate their business. We need something that hits them a lot harder. What's in the reconciliation bill begins to do some of that.
Does it? I mean, I look at Amazon. Amazon spent $200 million keeping 5,000 workers in Bessemer, Alabama, from exercising their right to join and form a union. Harassed, intimidated, conned the cops, bought a postal service guy, did everything you could possibly do. And we're still deciding if maybe the penalty should be we run another election. If it's me, I think the law should be you impose a union, you impose a first contract, and you shove it down their throats. But that's just me.
Well, it's not just you. There's a whole bunch of us who think that way. And I'm glad that you're putting it out there, because that's what's going to need to happen in order to turn around the reign of terror that these corporations run during elections right now, union elections.
So let me ask you this, because we're seeing right now all across this country, at least in my lifetime, this is the most strike activity that I have seen. Here tonight, you have members of the BCTGM in Michigan, in Nebraska, here in Pennsylvania, in Memphis, Tennessee, 1,400 workers at Kellogg's on strike. You saw the vote that came out yesterday. IATSE, 98% of their members authorizing the first possible first strike in their 128-year history. We've seen a lot of this stuff going on. And I've been saying, look, it's Striketober. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And, whether all of these will end up with people on the picket line versus some of them, most of them probably will get settled, which is usually what happens. But the fact that the threat is being made, the fact that these votes are coming in such overwhelming numbers and huge participation, my hat's off to IATSE with their folks are spread all over the country. And for them to get, huge
90%
turnout and then well over 90, like 98% in favor. I mean, that's just great. And, but it sends such a strong message to the employers that gets the employers to think, hey, maybe we got to do something. But this isn't happening in a vacuum. This is happening because workers are fed up and they've been fed up for a long time, but they're now seeing an opportunity. The pandemic has made things worse for workers, but it's also liberated workers to a certain extent that they've said, hell no, I'm not going to keep doing a crappy job for low pay, and also putting my health and my family's health at risk, maybe my life at risk. And we're not gonna stand for it anymore. So this is great that this is happening. I would say, you look back a couple of years and you had all of the teacher strikes. Right. And they kind of caught one happened and then it led to the others, et cetera. We're in a little bit of a similar circumstance, but now it's over in different sectors of the economy, sectors that really have been on their back for a long time in terms of real fight back. I mean, manufacturing has been very tough to do organizing in, and very tough to get workers to go out on strike because they've been afraid they'll get replaced, you know, and that other jobs that are out there are no good either. And, you know, one of the things that helps is, frankly, the whole fight for 15 has actually resulted in lifting up wages in a lot of places. And, you know, why work at a crappy job that's, you know, putting your health at risk when you can go get another job that's maybe less stress and less wear and, you know, pretty close to the same wages, and none of them have any decent benefits anymore. I mean, you know, there's no reason to stay there.
Yeah. No, and this is one of these things I've been saying, you know, we're seeing the organized workers, you know, taking this moment, seizing this moment for better wages, hours, conditions, dignity, respect, all of that stuff. But the sad reality is you've only got about 6% of the private sector workforce that are in unions. That means the rest of the workforce is getting hammered to death, and they're not able to go out and strike like this, which is why I'm a big fan of, we need to get something done through the PRO Act. We need to get something done to make it easier for those 94% of workers to have the same rights, the same power, the same ability as their union brothers and sisters.
Absolutely. But also, even in non-union workplaces, workers are standing up and fighting back. They won concessions during the pandemic, health and safety things. You saw it in a lot of places. You know, we've got a project called the Emergency Workplace, the Emergency Worker Organizing Committee, EWOC, that we started jointly with DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, and UE put it together, where there are literally hundreds of volunteers from all kinds of union backgrounds, not just ours, many others too, who will talk workers through with how do you fight back, how do you win immediate gains, and how do you maybe also turn it into a union organizing drive. Yeah. And so people should reach out and take advantage of that. And it's happening all across the country. And it's part of the big upsurge.
No, it's most certainly something we absolutely need to be doing more of. Workers talking to workers and raising conditions for everyone. And when in a couple of weeks, I'd love to have you back and talk about that and how we can get more people joining and informing and fighting this. Because at the end of the day, the only way we get a working class as prosperous as the ones of my grandparents' generation left us is if you're taken to these picket lines. But Carl, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts. Good on you, brother.
Thank you much. Great being here. Hope to see you again soon.
You as well. Carl Rosen, General President of the UE, the United Electrical. Make sure you check out their website. UEunion.org is that site. Gonna take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.